Well, welcome everybody to the Resilient Leadership Podcast, where everything that we talk about is aimed at helping you to lead with a greater sense of calm, clarity, and conviction, even in anxious times. I'm your co-host, Bridget Tyer. And as always, I am joined by my fellow co-host and colleague, Irvin Nugent. And Irvin, check in with folks and tell us how you're doing.
Yeah, welcome everyone. I'm feeling good today, even though it's kind of frigid outside. We are in the midst of winter down in the low teens outside. So it's a day to stay in and keep warm. But I'm excited. 2025 is underway. I kind of went in slowly, but now I'm kind of revving up a little bit and getting excited. So Bridget, tell us a little bit about the topic today.
Yeah, so today's topic we've called Bursting the Leadership Bubble. You might be asking yourself, what is this bubble and where does it come from? And so here's the truth of the matter. You know, the further that we move up in an organization, as we get promoted into supervisory roles, then into managerial roles, and then into even higher levels of leadership, the more insulated you are likely to become. And this is because, you know, you have a position in the organization and you have authority. And then what does that mean? It means people are less likely to be honest with you. And they're more likely to tell you what they think you want to hear. And it's kind of like, you know, the emperor in that famous children's fable, right? The emperor has new clothes. Of course, he didn't have new clothes. He had no clothes. Yep. And nobody wanted to tell him that. So we too become surrounded by this protected bubble, this cone of silence, right? That cuts us off from honest feedback and truth telling.
Yeah.
And, you know, what I've noticed, Irvin, and I'm curious if this has been the case for you too, is that it's rare for people to really give their bosses honest, direct feedback. And if you have one person on your team that does that for you, that's willing to go out on a limb, and let's say, tell you, for example, that your bad habit of rescheduling one-on-ones is making people feel like you don't value them, or that your recent presence in project meetings, you know, that you're running and like, you know, you're hovering and you're inserting yourself and you're asking questions and it's making people feel like, you know, you don't trust them. If you have one person who's going to tell you that, you know what, that's a gift. Yeah, but I also think it's rare, right?
Absolutely.
So Irvin, why do you think it's rare that people give this kind of feedback? And then what was your experience as a leader around this?
Yeah, you know, it's an interesting question. You know, as we begin this episode, there's an old adage that's not used as much now, but I remember it was kind of, you know, two things that a leader can be guaranteed off. One is never having a bad meal. And the second was getting the truth, you know, and the good old days when meals were provided, et cetera. But it kind of goes to that about, you know, truthful, honest, direct feedback. So I think the first thing I want to say is that I think so often feedback is considered something that's downward only, that we give feedback down to those direct reports who give feedback down. And the idea of giving feedback upwards, it's not strong. It's not a strong culture. And I think there's a number of reasons for that. I think part of it is sheer comfort. So it's not my place. You know, I often wonder, you know, how many does the boss says something bad and then all of a sudden behind there's whisperings behind, well, you're going to tell him? No, you should tell him. And no one really does, you know, but it's not my place. I think there is a feeling of it's not my place to do that.
Yeah.
And the interesting thing is, well, whose place is it? There's that. And I think there's just fear. It's fear of, it's risky. How much feedback is tolerable? We don't really know that. And so, like, how far should I go? I think there's a nervousness about that, that perhaps we'll meet the wrath of the person above us, or in the worst case scenario, you know, hey, I may be retaliated against because I'm a little too blunt, et cetera. So I think there's a, you know, a lot about fear. And I think we become, you know, we don't want to see the defensiveness of our boss, et cetera. And so I think what is, we either chicken out or we decide, you know, it's not my place, someone else will do it. Yeah. And of course, you know, no one else does it. And as a leader, you know, that's what I experienced. It is funny. And when people did, it was extraordinary. And I think, you know, there's one example to me that always stands out. I remember I used to have a standing meeting on a Friday with my bookkeeper. And I would be behind the desk and she would be in front of the desk. Once she said to me, "Can I say something and you may not like it?" And I said, "Okay." And she said, "You know, you're kind of distracted. I see you on your typing board and something comes up and you're looking at that. And because of that, I don't know if you realize this, but you're really not paying attention and you miss some of the details." And I remember my initial one, I could just feel the defensiveness just rising up. And then I had to really catch myself and say, "No, actually, she's right. She's absolutely right." And that took a lot of guts. You know, I'm saying it now because it sticks out. I appreciated it. And it brought a change in how I dealt with meetings. And it really was meaningful feedback that impacted my role as a leader. And I think what's going on there is that at times there's blind spots. You know, we all have our blind spots. And I love, there's a quote from Tiger Woods that I think is really good. Here he was at the peak of his career, dominant like no other golfer before him. And someone says, "Well, why do you need a coach?" And he quipped back, "Because I can't see my own swing." And how true that is. At times we don't see our own swing and we need input from others because we have blind spots. And so therefore, you know, Bridget, there's a dilemma there because as leaders, we need feedback. And yet the people we manage are sometimes are reluctant to give it. So what do you think about any strategies that might make it safer or bring down the risk of providing feedback when it's most needed to leaders?
Yeah, you know, the fact is that this bubble becomes pretty impermeable unless we actually are committed to doing something about it. It isn't going to go away on its own. In fact, it's just going to grow stronger.
Yeah.
And I think the bottom line is that we have to make it safer for people to go out on a limb. That's the bottom line. How do you do that? I think there's a couple things. One is that you can try to bake in upward feedback into your culture and into your systems, right? So that, for example, and I know some of my client companies do this, like at the annual or biannual performance improvement conversations, the forum includes now a question for upward feedback, right? Something to the effect of, "What am I doing that really works well? And what do I need to change to better support you?"
Yeah.
Everybody answers the question, so no one person feels like they're going out on a limb too much. So I think you can try to work on it culturally through your systems. That's number one. I think number two is you have to lead by example.
Yeah.
You have to be the person out front asking for feedback and showing that you not only can take it, but that you welcome it. And so you do it throughout the year, you know, like maybe after an important project is completed, you know, or while you're leading a change initiative, you're asking for feedback on how you can lead it better. You know, how about at the end of a failure or a mistake that happens, and instead of assuming you had nothing to do with it, asking what your role was in it. So I think leading by example is a big deal. I guess the other one is, boy, and this is a big one, and you alluded to this, don't get defensive. It's the most natural thing in the world to get defensive when someone says to you, "Could I tell you something you might not like to hear?" And you said you could feel your body respond.
Yeah.
The brain sees feedback as a threat.
Yeah.
So physiologically, you're going to have your defenses, right?
Yeah.
On alert, shall we say, and you have to regulate that.
Yeah.
You really have to like treat any feedback that you get as a gift.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean that you agree with it. It means you welcome it.
Yeah.
That's to me the crux of the matter, because the first time you get feedback that you get defensive around, it's the last time you get feedback.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So true.
So I don't know. Anything else to add to that, Irvin?
Yeah, just to throw out as well, just the role of it takes time. Trust. This is a trust building exercise in the sense of people need to see this in action. So, you know, we're going to tippy toe into it. People will kind of give you a little feedback and they're looking, how did this go? And I think, you know, if it goes well and you're receptive and we didn't respond punitively, et cetera, then it's okay. He or she is willing. They're serious about this. And I think, you know, as you build that trust and you welcome it in. And over time, people say, yeah, this actually is something that the leader really wants. And I think that's really important. So it's kind of for the leaders that this is not going to happen overnight. You can't click your fingers and change the culture. Right. This just requires a trust building process, and people are looking at you and looking at you intently in how you respond.
Oh, that is so true. It can take a long time to convince people that it's safe, don't you think?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Bridget, I'm wondering if we want to kind of try and embody this feedback and, you know, people that manage to pierce the leadership bubble. So when you think about leaders, anyone come to mind that dealt with wonderfully asking for feedback?
Mm-hmm. Okay, so here's a name, Dan Quinn. Hmm. If you are not from the Washington, D.C. area and or not a sports fan, you're scratching your head right now. Who's Dan Quinn? Well, who he is he is now the head coach of the Washington Commanders football team, a.k.a. previously the Redskins. This is his first year in D.C. And he was hired. I mean, he was obviously hired. He was considered a very successful coach. He had a good track record. But like all coaches and all leaders, he's had his share of ups and downs, right? So I happen to be a Commanders fan. Woohoo, go Commanders.
Yeah, and
big win. And I was inspired by him when I recently read an article about Dan Quinn and how he responded to failure. So, you know, he just took over the Commanders this year, and he's having a great year. He has led the team to a 12-5 record and 2 playoff wins. And for those of you who don't know this, this is a storybook turnaround because the Washington Redskins / now Commanders have been in the gutter for decades due to poor ownership and poor management. They hadn't won a playoff game since 2016, so 9 years ago, but it's been since 1991 that the Skins have been in the NFC Championship game, which they are heading into next week as we record this. Right. So what does all of this have to do with our topic? Actually, a lot. Back in 2020, Dan Quinn was the head coach of the Atlanta Falcons, and he took them to the Super Bowl, which is obviously a great accomplishment. And in the fourth quarter, his team was ahead by 25 points. Okay. 25 points. Everybody thought the game was over. In fact, I think the owner of the Atlanta Falcons was dancing on the sidelines, getting ready to celebrate. However, the New England Patriots were not done yet, and they came back to win the game, okay, in overtime. And it was the biggest comeback story in the Super Bowl of all time. Mm. Now you can imagine what a devastating loss that was, right? Oof. Okay. Ooh, that's a hard one. 3 years after that loss, Dan Quinn was fired. And here's where it gets really interesting. Immediately after getting fired, it turns out that he hired a woman that he was familiar with in the NFL. And I can't recall her exact role, but he hired her to do a 360 degree feedback survey / interview process for him. Mm-hmm. And she said, yeah, I'll do it. But, you know, you might want to wait a little while. You just had this devastating loss. You know, you want to process it. And he said, no, I really want to get after this. And so she interviewed about 25 of his past players, assistant coaches, other head coaches to find out what were his strengths. And just as importantly, and maybe more importantly, what were his weaknesses that maybe contributed to this devastating loss, which haunts him to this day. And she gave him the unvarnished truth. To my knowledge, this is not a common practice amongst NFL coaches. They don't do this. And what I think inspired me the most, and he talked openly about what he learned from this, is that he did it right after a major failure. And that's when we're most vulnerable.
Yeah.
And getting feedback is an act of vulnerability. So to do it in that moment really struck me. Mm. And I think it's such a good example of how to move past failure. And instead of reacting with defensiveness and being closed off to feedback, he instead chose to learn from it and to grow from it.
Yeah.
And right now he's enjoying tremendous success. And I like to think that asking for that feedback is part of it.
Absolutely. I love that.
Formula, right?
Yeah. Great example.
Do you watch football at all, Irvin?
I grew up in Ireland, so I'm not really a huge football fan. I'm more a rugby fan. That's what I grew up playing. So, but I can appreciate. I appreciate, you know, any sports and the coaching of sports, et cetera. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Okay. So how about you? What example comes to
mind? You know, there's an example I'm thinking about, which is kind of feedback on feedback, where we're going with this one. So I was coaching someone not too long ago who got some feedback from their boss. The feedback was they needed better executive presence. And so I said to the person, well, what does that mean? She goes, I don't really know. And I go, oh. And I said, well, you know, there's lots of ways that could go. So I said, you know, are you clear about this? I'm not really, no. And I said, well, what's some of the options? And he said, well, I suppose I could ask, what does she mean by that? Mm-hmm. And I said, well, are you willing to do that? And she goes, yeah, okay. Mm-hmm. So she went back to her boss and she says, look, what do you mean by that? And the boss was kind of stumped and he said, well, you know, and he goes, no, I don't. And it started a really wonderful conversation about here's what I mean by that. And it forced, first of all, her boss to be more specific in the feedback. It was a wonderful way of going up and taking some of that risk. Mm-hmm. But then towards the end of the coaching experience, she said to me, you know, my boss was talking to me the other day and she just said how much she appreciated that comment. And it made her think at times of the ways that she gave feedback that in her head made perfect sense, but that others really didn't have a clue.
They didn't get
and
it.
And it really made her change the way that she started giving feedback. And I said, you see, what you start with a little bit of, you know, kind of taking the risk and asking for clarity and the knock-on effect of that and how many people wouldn't have done that. And she kind of felt that she, you know, because of that, it actually changed the way her boss gave feedback.
Oh, I love that. It's, again, the power of leading by example and then the ripple effect of that.
Yes, absolutely.
She didn't do it for that reason.
No.
But other people benefit it. And is that always the case, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So anyone else come to mind for you, Bridget?
Yeah, you know, you're speaking of a client. So I'm going to share a client story that has recently inspired me. So this is a person I was coaching that really wanted to do a 360, but it wasn't budgeted in their coaching engagement. So we got to talking about it. Together, we kind of came up with this idea, and he decided he was going to ask for feedback from all of his direct reports with two simple questions. And those questions were, what are three things that are working well in our relationship dynamic that you want me to continue doing? It's good to get feedback on your strengths, right?
Yep. Well.
And then what is one thing I am doing that inadvertently makes your job more difficult, and how can I change this for the better? I thought those were two really good questions.
Yeah.
So we talked about it and he decided to just do this in the context of his regularly occurring one-on-ones, right? Don't make it a big deal. Like, we're not going to have a special meeting for this. And he sent the questions to them and he did ask them to write down their feedback and send it back to him before they had their one-on-one, just so he could be really thoughtful about it. So he gets everybody's written responses and we have a coaching session before he's going to do his one-on-ones. And not surprisingly, he got a little defensive. Mm-hmm. He got a little triggered by some of the feedback because people were very honest and forthcoming with him, which is really indicative of the level of trust that he had forged with these people, right? They felt safe with him to say these things. And so in coaching, we kind of worked through that, gave him the space to regulate around that, right? Mm-hmm. And to realize that he had to show up fully present, fully open to the feedback, and to thank them for it. And that's it, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, it went really well.
Love that.
He did make some changes based on what people said. What does that tell people? It means I was serious, right? Yeah. I wasn't just asking to look good.
Yeah.
What inspired me about this, like the example with Dan Quinn, and like your example, is the vulnerability that's involved in this.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a risk.
It's a risk, and such an important risk because of that higher oxygen level once we get up to the top, that there's no greater gift than that feedback. And I've really loved this discussion, you know, because at times I think we don't think of leaders being in a bubble and we don't think of the need to burst that. It's just so important that this kind of feedback, these blind spots, I think we can make assumptions that leaders are aware of these blind spots, and often they're not. And what's required is an ability to take a risk, to say what needs to be here, to create a culture that encourages that kind of feedback. And it takes the leader to be aware that this may lead to some defensiveness, and just to be aware of that. And also that this kind of feedback takes time. It takes a culture of trust as well. But I think in the midst of that, as painful as it may be in the moment, it creates opportunities for improvement and opportunities for development and growth. And ultimately, leadership is all about growth, and growth comes from really good feedback.
Yeah, you know, I don't know what the saying is, but it's something to the effect of all the good stuff, all the growth happens when you're way out on the end of that limb, dangling there,
yeah,
vulnerable and taking risks. Yeah. So I hope to our listeners, I hope that this conversation, these examples have inspired you to think about your leadership bubble. Because you don't ever burst it completely, I don't think, but you can poke some big holes in it.
Yeah.
And when you do, what's on the other side of that is what you just said, Irvin. There's a tremendous opportunity for growth and bigger impact in the world. Yeah.
And maybe you're listening and you're thinking, wow, you know, my boss really needs some honest feedback. Maybe I should take the risk. And I would encourage you to think about that. And if you feel so, take the risk, because I think it's a gift that you're offering.
Couldn't agree with you more. Irvin, thank you as always for this great conversation. It's been fun. I'm inspired. Teeing up our next conversation is kind of got some ties to this one, doesn't it?
It does. Yeah. We're going to explore a little bit about some courage and how courage might play out in the workplace.
Perfect. All right. Take care, everybody. Thanks for joining us.
Bye, everyone.